Once valued at close to $50 billion, WeWork is filed for bankruptcy. It's the business news headlines for Tuesday, the 7th day of November, and voting day here in the United States. Thanks for being with us. In other news, one of the main reasons people balk at an electric vehicle is distance. Stellantis Ram may have found an answer. Garment workers in Bangladesh get a big raise. The push to return to the office is getting dirty, and we'll take a deep dive into flawed research. A bit of housing news for you and the wage you'll need to buy one. We've got the Wall Street Report and Americans love drive-thrus. No, you really do. Let's go.
Insight on business, news, and comment with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Tarot International, the premier interpersonal skills, research, and corporate training company. Achieve, lead, and outclass with Tarot, TERO.com. Focus and Find, a high-level, socially responsible search firm helping major corporations in their search for diverse talent. FocusandFind.com. Funding also comes from the National Tractor Parts Dealer Association, an international organization supporting the new and used agricultural and construction parts industry. Learn more at ntpda.com.
Once again, thank you, Hunter Pease, and welcome to this, the Tuesday edition of the Business News Headlines. I'm your host, Michael Libby, grateful that you're with us again today. You want to find us on X, formerly known as Twitter? You can find us at IOB_NewsHour. And over on Threads, it's Insight on Business. At one time, WeWork, the flexible office company based in New York, was worth close to $50 billion. The company is now seeking bankruptcy protection in what has been a dramatic fall from grace. WeWork went public back in 2021 after trying to do so 2 years earlier. However, 2 years earlier and right out of the gun, there were questions about management's erratic behavior and heavy spending, and that spooked early investors. The company replaced the founder and CEO, but that was still not enough. The Associated Press is reporting that the specter of bankruptcy has hovered over WeWork for some time. Shortly after sounding the alarm over its business prospects this summer, the company announced plans to renegotiate nearly all of its leases in September. But cracks had begun to emerge several years ago. Japan's SoftBank stepped in to keep WeWork afloat, acquiring majority control over the company. WeWork shareholders, meanwhile, are largely wiped out through SoftBank, which owns nearly 80% of the equity distributed in the company. And by the way, the bank has lost billions. Despite efforts to turn the company, including significant cuts to operating costs and raising revenue, WeWork has struggled in a commercial real estate market that's been rocked by the rising cost of borrowing money, as well as a shifting dynamic for millions of office workers now checking into work remotely. There's also rising competition in the flexible office industry, and that includes some legacy office landlords competing directly with co-working space providers. Interest in the electric vehicle market has slowed, mostly because consumers are concerned about running out of juice. It's called the range of travel for the battery. Now, the Stellantis Ram brand may have an answer for that, especially for people who need a truck to haul or tow things. It is called the Ram Charger, a pickup that can travel 145 miles on electricity with a 3.6 liter V6 gas-powered engine linked to a generator that can recharge the battery while the truck is moving. And here's a true story for you. You know, we were sitting around about a year ago talking about why doesn't somebody do this? And now it's happened. The AP is reporting that Stellantis, which has been slow to introduce fully electric vehicles in the U.S., is so confident in the new powertrain's appeal that it plans to offer it in other vehicles. While the company won't officially comment, a new tentative contract agreement with the United Auto Workers says Stellantis plans to use the same power system in the Jeep Wrangler small SUV in 2028 and the Jeep Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer large SUVs in 2025. For the seventh day in a row, Wall Street ended the day in the green. Those numbers, well, they're coming at you in just a bit. Recently, we reported on the labor protests going on in Bangladesh, the second largest provider of clothing in the world. Workers there were demanding a raise to their minimum monthly wage, which until now was $67 a month. Authorities there offered $75 a month, but that was rejected by the workers, who walked out, many causing damage to garment factories. Now the government will pay $113 a month, and while that's far below the demand of the workers, it's still enough to halt the protests. Bangladesh annually earns about $55 billion from exports of garment products, mainly to the United States and Europe. The country is exploring new markets in Japan, China, and India. $113 a month. Think about that the next time you buy that $200 sweater that was made in Bangladesh. The headline is, quote, "The fight over return to office is getting dirty," end quote. Well, that got us to looking at what Business Insider is reporting, and it deals with Amazon. You know, the company that's so data-driven that it reminds you when you need to reorder toilet paper. Now, this obsession with metrics and data, however, does not appear to extend to certain parts of Amazon's workplace. Over the past few months, the company has aggressively pushed employees back into the office. In February, Amazon announced that employees would be required to come into the office 3 days a week, and since then, the e-commerce giant has escalated its battle with remote employees, sending emails to employees about their attendance, creating internal dashboards to display how many days a week each employee was coming into the office, and telling managers just in October that they could begin firing employees who weren't meeting the return-to-office requirements. When employees pressed executives for the reason behind the mandate, supposedly data-obsessed higher-ups have seemed to have no data to justify it. Asked in August about this, Mike Hopkins, a senior vice president of Prime Video in Amazon Studios, offered a vague response, saying that he had no data either way on whether mandating in-office work made people more productive, but that executives believe that Amazon's workers do their best work when they're together. Now, I'm sorry for this long report, but there's a lot of stuff here. As the return-to-office battle has heated up in the past 6 months, there's been a marked increase in declarations that remote work is less productive. But diving deeper into this evidence reveals flawed logic and a media industry obsessed with proving bosses right. The study that most often has been used to argue for the necessity of in-office work is a July working paper from researchers at the National Bureau of Economic Research, which, by the way, randomly assigned data entry workers at a company in India to work either from home or in the office for 8 weeks. The researchers determined that remote workers were 18% less productive than their in-person counterparts. And journalists have consistently cited this study without, it seems, taking a moment to consider its findings. Ready? First and foremost, it's kind of odd to use the work of entry-level data workers in India, who were recruited specifically for this study, as a proxy for all employees in all industries around the world. And secondly, the measurement of their productivity was net speed, or the number of correct entries they made in a minute. The drop in productivity is really about how fast people could put numbers into a sheet. But that is not what people do at work. Meanwhile, workers resist going back to the office not because they're less productive, but because other studies show productivity and happiness increases when employees work from home. Long story, but now you know. Hey, you want to buy a house in the U.S.? Better be making a ton of money each year. Benzinga is reporting that the average American wage earner needs to earn tens of thousands of dollars per year more than in the past to afford the average house in America. According to the U.S. Census, the average American household income in 2022 was $74,580. Meanwhile, the average home price is $431,000, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. Benzinga looked at why both of those averages spell trouble for the housing market. So you ready? Let's do the math. A 20% down payment on a $431,000 house would be around $86,000 and leave roughly $345,000 in mortgage principal. In the early stages, a 7.5% annual percentage fixed rate mortgage on $345,000 is about $25,000 annually in interest, or a little over $2,000 a month. Most mortgage lenders want borrowers to earn triple the mortgage amount in monthly income to qualify. Now, if the monthly interest we're talking, is $2,000, the borrower would need to make $6,000 a month to afford it. That means the annual income of $72,000, so an average American wage earner can afford the interest on a loan, but not the principal. Now, taking into account the principal, taxes, and insurance, the monthly payment on a $345,000 mortgage would be somewhere north of $3,500. That means you would need a six-figure annual income to afford the house. As recently as the late 1990s and early 2000s, a $100,000 annual income put you safely in the upper middle class. Today, you'd need to earn almost 50% more than the average American's annual income to buy the average house, and that is assuming you're in position to put 20% down. Scary? You bet. For the seventh day in a row, Wall Street notched a win. The Dow closed up by 56 points to 34,152, while the NASDAQ picked up 121 points to end the trade at 13,639, and the S&P 500 added 12 points to finish the day at 4378. West Texas Intermediate crude fell yet again, down by $3.69 to $77.14 a barrel. The 10-year T-bill, that fell as well, down to 4.569%. And finally, there is this, and this is about our love of drive-thrus. The New York Times is reporting that drive-thru traffic is up a whopping 30% since before the pandemic, while the number of people eating inside fast food restaurants is down by nearly half. And the big chains are taking notice. Popeyes is slashing dining room sizes, while Chick-fil-A is opening a drive-thru in Atlanta that can handle 75 cars at once. So what's behind the big boom? Industry experts say the pandemic turbocharged upgrades that were already underway, such as changes in mobile ordering and traffic flows. But it may also have lessened people's desire for social interaction. Come on, say it. Say it ain't so. That's a wrap for today's business news headlines. Thanks so very much for joining us. For all of us that put this together each and every day, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator, sales and marketing. Aaron Libby, the voice of the Business News Hour, is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks, my name's Michael Libby, wishing you a good evening. Be safe, be well, be careful, most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.